1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here on the Tuesday edition of the program. Did the Cubs give us an answer? We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with KC Johnson. He's the Bulls insider at NBC Sports Chicago. We talk with him about what happened this Bulls season, what to expect in the offseason and in the NBA draft, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Ryan McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs, and he's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no games with Ryan. He's just here to help you and make sure you feel safe. So if you have insurance needs and you haven't called him yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or find him online at ryanismyagent.com. The link is also in the description of the video. That's ryanismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. 1 week ago, on this program, I asked for an answer. Those of you who listen regularly know what I'm about to say. I wanted to know what the Cubs were. I wanted to know who they were as a team. Should they start to rebuild? Was it time to tear it all down? Should they contend? Didn't know. All indications pointed towards a rebuild. Sure, they were getting hot and things got better, but they were a 500 team. We didn't know. So I said, we don't know who this team is. Trade deadline's fast approaching. Something needs to give. There needs to be an answer before the trade deadline. There needs to be clarity so Jen Hoyer and company know what to do when August 1st comes. So we waited. We did the wait-and-see type approach, as I've said many a time on this program. You don't know enough about a team in 10 games. You have to wait 30, 40, 50 to start to get impressions on who they are. That's what concerned me about the Cubs. We were 40 games in, 45 games in, and none of us had a clue. No one had a clue. People said they knew. People thought they knew. No one knew. Fans thought, oh, great team. Critics thought, oh, time to rebuild. And no one really knew what to believe. Ever since I asked for an answer, there's been one. Not a full one, I'll explain why in a moment, but somewhat of an answer. And now a word from our sponsor, True Classic Tees. Are you tired of boxy t-shirts that just won't get the job done? What about ones that feel too big and uncomfortable? I have that problem a lot. Thanks to True Classic Tees, though, those problems are over. See, I'm wearing one right now. Very comfortable, double-stitched for endurance, and custom-made to fit your dimensions. And get this, a portion of every sale goes towards helping homeless vets get off the streets. So you're helping out our veterans. You're buying quality material from a great independent company. Listeners of this program get a discount, too. Use JON10, that's J-O-N-10, to get 10% off your next purchase. Go to TrueClassicTees.com, that's TrueClassicTees.com, or find the link in the description of the video. True Classic Tees, top clothing at a good cost. The Cubs this past week went on a 6-game win streak. A 6-game win streak. They stand at 29-23. Second place in the Central. A 43% chance to make the postseason. 2% chance to win the World Series. That doesn't seem like much, but before it was less than 1. About a week ago, it was less than 1 to win the World Series. Now it's 2. Their run differential is positive. Their Pythagorean win-loss, which calculates where they should be because of run differential, is the same as their record. They're right where they're supposed to be. Every game they lost, they deserve to lose. Every game they won, they deserve to win. And it got me thinking. Are the Cubs for real? Are the Cubs, dare I say, a real team? Is this 2017? Is this 2016? Should they not rebuild? They've been on a roll. And as they've been on this roll, I've been asking myself those same questions. I'm sure you have too. They have a number of players above 100 when it comes to OPS Plus. Contreras, Rizzo, Baez, Duffy, Peterson, Bryant. Their bullpen, lights out bullpen. Only one reliever with an ERA above 3, Rex Brothers, 3.31. Winkler, Chapin, Tapera, Kimbrel, all under 3. Kimbrel under 1. Winkler under 1. Starting rotation is, of course, the biggest problem. Trevor Williams is out indefinitely with an appendectomy, but his ERA was 5. Hendricks, Arrieta, Davies, all above 4. And Albert Azelay, the only one who's actually put together a couple of good starts at 3.81. As we said last week, the rotation is going to be the team's biggest problem. We talked about that too. Every year, it's something different for this team. Hitting, can't hit. Bullpen, can't close games. Pitching, can't throw strikes. Can't limit runs. It's something new every year. And that's been the biggest problem and the biggest reason why the Cubs did not repeat as champions. Couldn't repeat. Weren't good enough. What I really like about this team is their rebellious attitude. They know what management wants. It's been said publicly what management wants, and they acknowledged it. But they've also said, we don't care. We're going to fight. No one believes in them, including me. I think this is all a nice story, but it's not going to lead them anywhere. It's going to put the organization back. They don't care. They don't care what I have to say, what Jed Hoyer has to say, what writers in this city have to say. They're just going to play. They're just going to play as a team and do what they can. If they win, they win. If they lose, they lose. And they move on. But they're willing to fight. They're not willing to cave down to a narrative. I like that. They're not willing to accept what everyone said about them and just say, yep, that's us. Sit on their hands and wonder what to do. No, they're actively fighting back. Whether you're a Cubs fan or not, even if you're a Sox fan and you're watching right now, you have to respect that. You have to respect that. Any team, or almost any team, would cower down. Think about it. When you're a team who knows you have to rebuild, you never see them do well, right? Cubs didn't do well in 2013, 2014. Everybody knew the mindset was, we're a rebuilder, so we won't play well. That attitude permeated the fan base, permeated the players, coaches, everybody. So no one demanded excellence, no one expected it, and the result was, well, 90 losses, 100 losses. Here, though, it's different. The expectation was, time to rebuild. The reality was, we're not going to listen. We're not bowing down. We're not going to take that attitude into the clubhouse and have it infect all of us. No. It was, we will prove you wrong. You all know me. When I'm wrong, I'll admit it. Right now, if the Cubs keep playing like this, I will admit I was wrong. That said, here's why I'm just a little bit skeptical right now. The Cubs have a brutal June coming up per Bleacher Nation. The Cubs will face just one team under 500. One team under 500. The rest of everybody they face is a quality playoff contender. Quote, I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that if the Cubs can come out of this month within a game or two of first place in the NL Central, that might be the dividing line, whether they become buyers or sellers in July. That in turn probably requires them going 500 against this rough slate. 500. The Cubs need to go 500 in June. They need to be a few games out of the Central come July after this tough month. If they do, well, I think we'll have our answer for sure. I do. We still don't know today whether truly they're buyers or sellers. They played like buyers, but it's only a week stretch. There have been bad weeks this year. Good ones, too. But using a whole month to judge, better idea. I think that. Way better to use all of June, in which you face real contenders pretty much every game. That will determine who you are as a team. That's a fact. Then we'll finally have a real answer. We'll know who they are. Because as of today, there's optimism, sure, but the question still remains. Who are the Chicago Cubs? Who are they? Are they a bottom feeder? Probably not, but still in the picture. Are they a 500 team? Are they a playoff team? Are they a World Series contender? What will they do come the trade deadline? Five questions. We don't have the answer. That's the difficult part. That's the part we don't know about. Further quote from the article, quote, the more I look at it, if the Cubs do go 500 in June, I'm thinking they absolutely should bet on themselves as buyers. The Cubs did what they needed to do in May to keep this conversation going. They did. True. They played well enough to earn another month. That simple. They played well enough to earn one more month. And this might be a month-by-month basis. That's the way it is. That's how it's going to work for this team. When you're going back and forth, when you don't know who you are, and you have management who knows what they want, it's going to be a month-by-month thing. Because the minute they falter, the minute the Cubs actually falter, if that happens, it's over. We know that. It's over. If they falter, if they lose 8 straight, 6 straight, it's going to be over. So they either have to keep winning or at least play 500 baseball, or there will be changes. And all of your favorite players will go. For their future, I still believe that's the best course of action. But performance-wise, this year, you're handcuffed. Because they performed like they deserve to stay, and they deserve to play hard and win. Surprising, I know. I don't believe in their starting pitching. You shouldn't either. That's a fact. And if the Cubs do become buyers, I would hope that'd be their number one area of concern. I think it would be. And if they address that, who knows what this team could do? I'm not saying World Series, but they would make the playoffs. A nice consolation prize. But is that what needs to happen? Not really. You know where I've stood on this from the very beginning. And this is not an attack or me hating on them. This is me looking out for their future. I firmly believe the best course of action is to rebuild and move on. That's the best way to do this. Rebuild. Move on, new core, bring them in. By 2025, you'll be great again. Nothing wrong with that. I've been saying that since 2019. But see, this year, performances are saying otherwise. For once, Chris Bryant's actually playing. Well, too. Role players whom we expect to do well have done their job. This is different than 2019 or 2020. Guys are performing. Trade deadline's coming up. And right now, I'm leaning towards don't sell. If they're going to keep playing like this, there's no point in selling. It'd be smart for their future, but it'd be unfair to the guys who performed so far. It's a really tough situation. I do not envy Jed Hoyer. Said that last week. I'll say it again. I'll say it moving forward. I do not envy Jed Hoyer. He knows what ownership wants. He knows what the players want, and he's the middleman. Not an easy job. I wouldn't want that on my shoulders. That's why I'm doing this. He has to listen to his gut on this. He has to watch what's going on, how these guys are performing. They deserve, based on numbers, purely numbers, to stay together. They didn't before. They do now. So if those change, if the results change, if they start losing, time to switch. If not, it's going to be a very tough decision. Chris Bryant's at the top of his game. Two ways to look at that. One, keep the team around, build around Bryant, MVP. Two, trade Bryant because he's at the top of his value and bring in a haul. Both have their merits and their issues. Both ideas, pros and cons. I'm still leaning towards trading Bryant. That's it. If he keeps up this pace and he somehow wins the MVP, the other option becomes more viable. See how this works? So we have some answers about the Cubs. Not all, but some. And it's just puzzling to see how this all plays out and how it's been playing out. It's so hard to explain. And I'm sure many of you Cubs fans could relate to this. I've seen comments saying, I want to root for Bryant, but I don't want to root for this team. I'm conflicted. I don't know what to do. I have to wait it out. I have to see how this team continues to react. June will tell a lot. It will. When you're facing every team but one above 500, that'll tell who this team is. Hey, if they're a contender, they better win out. Plain and simple. If they're a true contender, if they want this team to stay together and contend, win a division, move far in the playoffs, then they have to put up a winning record. They have to show to everybody, Jed Hoyer, me, you, that they are a force to be reckoned with. If they struggle, they have issues. If they finish so far under 500 in this month, and we all know, not a contending team, not a serious team, time to rebuild. June will tell a lot. We'll be all over it for coverage, of course. But June will tell everything. We will know by the end of the month who they are. Finally, that will determine the trade deadline, trade talks, and how they should approach the rest of the season and their future. Till then, though, we're left waiting. And we're left wondering. We saw this great win streak. What does that mean? Pitcher's ERAs are still high. They won six straight, then just lost to Cincinnati. Who are the Cubs? Who are they? We don't know. We know a little bit more, but not much more. Hey, they did great against the Pirates, but it's the Pirates. This will tell a lot. I know a lot of Cubs fans are on edge. They want to know what direction this team is going in. They have no clue. What I would say is just stay patient. See, you're getting your opportunity now. Finally. There really won't be any more guesswork after June. Going to face a lot of contenders. Going to see how you do. Hopefully get healthier. And then make a determination. So if you're still waiting and wondering and puzzled as to what's going on, I recommend you wait out June. I recommend you pay attention intently to this team. I'm excited. I don't know about you, but I'm excited. I like the team's attitude. Player-wise, I do. I like the rebellious nature. I like the fact that they know and they publicly acknowledged what the Ricketts and what Hoyer wants, and they've said, essentially, screw you. We're not doing it. I like it. The question is, though, can they act on it? Can they execute? That's the problem. Do they have the capacity? Do they have the sheer talent to execute? That's the question. I don't know if they do. And that's not blaming them for not having talent. It's the fact that their roster is not what it was 4 or 5 years ago. Do they have the talent today with this roster to defy Jed Hoyer and the Ricketts family? I don't know. Doesn't seem like it to me. And if they prove me wrong, I'll admit it. But right now, I'm still a bit skeptical. I want to see how this plays out. The next month will determine everything. And if you're a Cubs fan, you could be worried, but you should be excited. Because you'll finally know who your team is. No more guesswork. No more wondering, oh, who's going to be traded? Will they be traded? Are they contenders? I don't know. No more of that. No more uncertainty. It becomes factual. It becomes real. And that's something you should really be hoping for. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Casey Johnson comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free, depending on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. Must be 21 plus. Must be an Illinois resident. You can bet $250 free on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. Cubs and White Sox are back. Bears prop bets going strong, plus the NBA Finals and the NHL playoffs. This is, without question, the best time to put down some money and win a whole lot more back. At sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Talk Chicago. Here with John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's covered the Bulls for 30-plus years, and today serves as the Bulls insider at NBC Sports Chicago. Please welcome Casey Johnson to the program. Casey, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me back. I hope you're doing well, and happy Bulls offseason to you.
What's your evaluation of their season?
That's a good question, because it's a weird kind of dynamic from my seat, in the sense that there seems to be quite a bit of positive energy both within the franchise and certainly amongst the fan base that kind of gets in my radar, my sphere, so to speak. However, it has to be balanced and juxtaposed with the disappointment of not making not only not the playoffs, but the play-in opportunity with the league expanding to 10 teams. You know, I know obviously there were some mitigating factors that made that hard, with particularly the Zach LaVine unfortunate timing of you know, landing in the health and safety protocols for as long as he did. But yeah, so it kind of has a feeling of slight disappointment at the end, but quite a bit of positive energy, in the sense that there seems to be a decent foundation on which to build moving forward.
What did you expect for them this year? Were you in the boat of a playoff appearance or no?
No, but see, the problem with the preseason predictions is they all went out the window when Arturas made the trades on deadline, because, sure, you know, obviously you're basing that on a young team, and you know, a lot of players need to make big jumps. And then, you know, he pulled the plug on a lot of those young players and shipped them off to acquire the All-Star and the other pieces that he did. But no, I did not have them even as a play-in candidate in my preseason predictions. I had them finishing 27 and what would that be, 55 or 27 and 45. You know, I was close on the record, but to me, all bets change when he made the deal that he did. I mean, he said it himself. This was, you know, a move to show that we're serious about winning, and he meant not only in the future, but winning now. And as I said before, it didn't really pay the immediate dividends that you hoped it would. And, you know, clearly, you know, Zach missing 11 games played a major factor in that.
How'd you feel about those moves? Did they give up too much to get Vucevic? And did they give up too many draft picks from Garpak specifically?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a good question. I mean, it really is just your opinion or your, you know, beauties in the eye of the beholder. I personally, you know, don't think it was too much to pay in the sense of you're acquiring an all-star. Now, you could make the argument, you know, Vuce is not, you know, maybe not a lead all-star. He's kind of one of those fringe all-stars. But the bottom line is he's a two-time all-star. And all you know, you kept hearing from disgruntled members of, you know, the fan base or the media corps or, you know, the people that question things, including myself, was, you know, when is this team going to get an all-star? Well, now you got two. And again, you could say Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic aren't, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. I get that. But the bottom line is it's still two all-star caliber players. And, you know, that is a good foundation on which to build. Now, obviously, this all points to a very important summer for management, and Arturis has alluded to it as much. And, you know, last season he did not make many changes coming in, didn't have a lot of open roster spots, and now this summer he will have a lot of open roster spots. So it's on him and his staff to now enact the right moves to surround these guys with the right talent.
What needs do they need to address?
Well, I mean, the big one, obviously, to me is, and has been for a while, and not just to me, but to a lot of people, is point guard. And, you know, I actually heard from talking to people around the league last summer that they were going to be in on point guard, and then they chose not to. And, you know, for the second straight offseason, I'm already hearing those whispers around the league that they're focused on point guard. And, you know, there are opportunities to address the position last summer. They chose to go in a different direction. You know, this there's almost like too many points to make here. I don't want to have this sound too, like too much of a criticism of Kobe White, because I think Kobe showed a lot of growth this season, and I think to me he's a very important piece moving forward. But I just don't think he's the type of facilitating point guard that makes others around him better. Again, that sounds like a critique of Kobe. I think Kobe actually had a very overall strong season, particularly the way he finished, and I'm glad he's on the roster if you're a Bulls fan, because I think there's a lot to like there. But I just think you need a facilitating point guard to kind of make others better. And that to me is the biggest need. You're probably gonna need some big man depth, particularly if Tice goes elsewhere in free agency, which is certainly a possibility. And then obviously the Bulls historically have been pretty thin at wing and kind of project that way as well. So there's a lot that they need to do this summer for sure.
Casey Johnson here on Sports Talk Chicago. Casey, who stood out to you most from this past year on the roster?
I mean, to me, it was Zach. I just think it's so hard to make the jump that he did from a very good player to, you know, in that all-star borderline all-NBA type player. And, you know, I know there's still some people out there that are detractors of Zach, you know, and want him to become a better two-way player. He wants to become a better two-way player, but just if you really look at his season objectively, particularly offensively, it was special. There's just no other way to slice it. You know, he was in rarefied air with his shooting splits and his efficiency. I wrote that he did some math, which is never easy for me and usually quite painful, but he was six assists and one missed free throw away from joining Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and Larry Bird as the only players in NBA history to average 27, 5, and 5 on shooting splits of 50, 40, and 85.
Wow.
So, I mean, he just had a really special season, and I thought his leadership grew. I thought his decision-making improved. I thought defensively he was more engaged overall, but still needs to improve in that department. And he alluded to as much. And one thing that Garrett Temple and Zach said in the exit interviews that really stood out to me is, you know, Garrett's just been harping on him. Just, you know, Zach is always so well conditioned and in such good shape, but to be an elite two-way player, you just have to be on all the time and the energy it takes to be, you know, dominant at both ends. If you think back to guys like Jordan and Pippen, it just takes a level that even Zach now is starting to understand he needs to get to. So he always puts the work in. I'm excited to see what's next for him.
How surprising was the growth under Billy Donovan, too? Because obviously him and Boylan didn't really connect. A new coach comes in and all of this stuff happens. Do you connect those two pieces?
I mean, I do. I think Zach would have taken a jump regardless, just the way he's driven and the way he's wired and the way he works. And I think obviously the fact that he was borderline all-star last year and didn't get it was eating at him. And he's not an individualistic guy, but, you know, he knows that if you're an all-star, there's probably some team success that is surrounding that as well. And at the, you know, time of the voting, the Bulls were in that playoff window. So, but to your point, there's no question that he respected and connected with Billy. And, you know, this is a pretty astounding statistic, but if Billy Donovan, you know, finishes next season, which you never say never in this league, but I think we'd all agree is a 99.99% certainty, it'll be the first time in Zach's career, in his eighth season, that he'll have played for the same coach for two full seasons in a row. That's just remarkable. And so that kind of, stability and that kind of consistency combined with his respect for Billy, I think can really pay some dividends moving forward.
Should the Bulls extend him, Ben? Could they afford an extension for Zach LaVine?
To me, when you made the trade for Nikola Vucevic, you almost made yourself say you almost have to now. I mean, you don't sacrifice two first-round picks for my siblings. You don't sacrifice two future firsts unless you're building around Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic. So to me, it's a no-brainer. You extend them. How you do that, you know, when you do that, whether it's this summer using cap space, renegotiating and, ripping up the last year's deal or waiting until he gets the unrestricted free agency and tackling it that way, that's for people on a higher pay grade than myself. But yeah, to me, when you trade for Nikola Vucevic, you all but from my seat sealed your need to extend him. And he's earned it. I mean, he's like I said before, he hasn't had a lot of coaching consistency or stability in his career. He's a worker. He wants to win. He cares for the right things. So you have to believe as he enters his prime here, he's even go to another level. So you have to pay for that. And so to me, that's a no-brainer, yes.
How detrimental is the coaching consistency to a player? Because you can argue, too, that Lauri Markkanen also suffered from that same thing, right?
You sure can. Zach, I think to me, I thought Lauri had a good season overall, but not a great season. And, you know, I think Zach is more accomplished than Lauri. But, yeah, I mean, to draw a poor cross-sports analogy, you hear about quarterbacks and, you know, different coordinators and how that can stunt growth. So, yeah, there's something to it. And, you know, Lowry's role has changed quite a bit and has been jacked around. So he's looking for stability as well. I personally think it might be elsewhere. At the end of the day, but we'll see how his restricted free agency plays out. But, you know, the difference is that the Bulls entered with high hopes for both those guys. And, you know, Zach ascended to all-star status and Lowri moved from being a starter to a reserve. Now, I'm not saying that's all Lowry's fault, but coaching decisions play a part of that. Roster makeup plays a part of that. But, I think to put the coaching situation as the sole reason for Lowry's struggle is probably overstating it a little bit.
So you don't think Lauri is returning right now?
I mean, I don't, but as I said before, you never say never in this league. What if he goes out and restricted free agency and doesn't love the looks he gets and the Bulls aren't comfortable going long-term on him? There's a slim chance. I don't think it's likely, but there's a slim chance he plays a year on a qualifying offer to placate, you know, the Bulls' payroll, and then he moves into unrestricted free agency next summer. Again, I think that's a long shot scenario, but it's certainly one that can happen. I do think there's going to be interest in Lowri in restricted free agency, and I think, you know, the Bulls keep saying the right things publicly, but with their actions, they've said completely the opposite. I mean, they said they wanted to extend him, and then it's their right, but they went to a number and, you know, didn't want to go past that before the season started on the extension. And then, you know, Lowri got off to the strong start, but then had the, you know, health and safety protocols and the shoulder injury, and then the roster changed and the coaching staff deemed him not a great fit alongside Vucevic. Then it becomes a reserve. I mean, you're not going to commit $18 million a year to a reserve, and Vucevic isn't going anywhere. So I personally, you know, they tried to trade him at the deadline. So, now they didn't try as hard as they could because I was told that they didn't engage in all talks. They just were obviously specific in their talks. The big one being with Lonzo Ball, which was widely reported. But I don't know. It just seems like there's a lot of signs that this is headed for a divorce. But as I said before, you never say never in this league.
What do you think about Markkanen as a player? Could he still succeed in the NBA?
You know, John, I'm probably higher on Lowry than most. But what I would say about this, he just, to me, I've been, as you know, around this league a long time. Sure. He's got the feel of one of those players who just, if he goes elsewhere, he's going to thrive. It just has that feel. I could be wrong, but it just has that feel. He's got too much talent. It just hasn't worked out for him here for a multitude of reasons. And it just has that feel that if he goes somewhere else and gets in the right situation, he's going to take off. Now, is he going to be a multiple all-star? I don't see that. But I just think he's going to be better than what he's shown here. And, you know, sometimes that just happens in the NBA. I mean, that's just how this league works. It's about opportunity. It's about fit. It's about circumstance. And, you know, he's had a lot of things go right here, and he's had a lot of things go wrong here. And it just has a feel of kind of needing to end at this point. So we'll see how it plays out.
Let me ask you this, then. What's the lineup look like for next year, the starting five? What do you think?
No, that's impossible to predict because there's just too many open roster spots. I mean, you're going to use Penn to put in Patrick Williams. Three spots are in Penn to me is Patrick Williams, Zach LaVine, and Nikola Vucevic. You know, Kobe White will be in the rotation for sure. Whether he's starting a point guard depends on how they address that position in the offseason. But really, to me, that's your core now is White, LaVine, Williams and Vucevic, and then obviously whatever additions they make this summer will be you know, important moving forward as well. But to me, you can only use Penn to put down three starters, and the rest is TBD depending on all the moves that this management team makes this offseason.
Do you like that core personally?
I mean, again, you know, I heard a lot like how the Bulls going to get one all-star, how the Bulls going to get a second all-star. Well, they got two all-stars now. So, I mean, is it a championship core? I don't see that, but is it a good core? Sure. I mean, you know, but here's the other thing. We're just talking a lot. And, you know, the players say this too. They got to do it on the court. I mean, you know, they need to make the playoffs next year. It's as simple as that. They've got, you know, they traded away draft picks to kind of move into win now mode. So they need to make the playoffs next year. Zach and Vooch need to form chemistry and play at an all-star level. Patrick needs to make a jump. Kobe needs to continue to grow. And then the management team needs to make good signings and good moves this offseason. Because, you know, you've sacrificed a lot of draft capital to get to where you are as we talk.
How hopeful are you about that, about things going well?
I have no hopes, John, because I'm an objective beat reporter. So I don't really care if the Bulls win or lose. I just cover it. But no, I'm having a little bit of fun with your question. But, you know, I mean, again, I think it's a decent core. I mean, you got two all-stars, right? So, you know, what are we doing here? Let's win some basketball games. Particularly if the play-in tournament is here to stay, which I think it is, you know, you shouldn't even really be in that 7, 8, 9, 10 spot. You should be aiming for a top six seed next year and take the play-in situation out of the equation. I mean, that's what management has said. You know, we will not accept mediocrity here. I recognize that, you know, they just got here, but you know, they traded draft picks to acquire a 30-year-old all-star. So, you know, I'm not hopeful either way. I'm just observing, but the way I see it is they need to get in the top six next season for it to be a success.
More to come with KC Johnson in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. KC Johnson, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. KC, two more questions before we finish out. First off, how was the lifeguard concert?
Yeah, you saw my Twitter account. I'm a self-professed music nut. Live music is a huge part of my life, and obviously, it's way down on the "Woe Is Us" list from the pandemic, behind employment and health. But live music was something that was a casualty of the pandemic, so I've been missing concerts a lot, and my oldest son's buddy from school has formed a pretty cool band called Lifeguard, and they were touring or playing some local shows, and they played an outdoors show at Fitzgerald's, which is a fantastic club for those of you who've never been. It's under new ownership that seems to be doing things cool. So it was fun to just be around musicians again and see music. The person in Lifeguard that my son knows, his father is also a musician in a great band called Fax, F-A-C-S. They just released a new record. So check it out for those of you who are music lovers out there.
What's one band you really want to see post-pandemic?
Well, that I couldn't narrow it down to one. I can tell you some bands that I was going to see I had, probably 8 concerts lined up during the pandemic that they went by the wayside. So I could run down some of those. Proto Martyrs, a band that I'm pretty into that I was going to see during the pandemic that got shut down. I was going to see Ed O'Brien, the rhythm guitarist for Radiohead, his first solo tour, bringing him over here. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds was going to be at UIC Pavilion. Julia Jacklin was going to be at Old Town School of Folk Music. So yeah, I could go on and on, John. This is my true passion. This is what I'm hopeful about, is live music, not basketball.
And Casey, before we finish up today, last question. Can you tell us about the time you were a ball boy for Michael Jordan?
Yeah, well, it wasn't just for Michael Jordan. So this is a pretty crazy story, but I played Division III college basketball at Beloit College in Wisconsin. And our coach, Bill Napton, was there for 40 years, a pretty influential Division III coach, and knew a lot of the Division I coaches and NBA coaches. He actually, this is a side story, he was actually on the National Association of Basketball Coaches Rules Committee and cast a deciding vote to put the three-point shot into college basketball in 1986.
Wow.
So between my sophomore and junior year at Beloit, the three-point shot arrived, and I moved to being a passive gunner to a very active gunner. No, but I digress. So anyway, Bill Napton knew Stan Albeck, the Bulls coach at the time, and our field house at the time had a pretty well-known basketball floor, in the sense that it was an old school field house with a raised floor, very springy, good on the joints. And the Bulls were looking for a place to hold training camp. And so they picked Beloit College in the fall of 1985. And those of us who were on the basketball team, you were not alive, but those of us on the basketball team got to serve as ball boys during the practice. It was pretty cool because, I got to hang out and watch Michael Jordan and Orlando Woolridge and Quentin Daly and guys like that practice. And it was obviously a pretty cool experience for a young college undergrad who was playing Division III basketball. So shout out to Beloit College and Bill Napton, and a fun memory for me.
Well, Casey, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on and talk Bulls, and best wishes here as the offseason gets underway. It should be a hectic one. Thank you so much.
All right, John, thank you.
Great talk there with Casey Johnson, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Casey Johnson himself, Matt Tubio, WCKG, Jim DeTaub, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No!
Here are the Turtles!